Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This month, the FDA approved a new COVID vaccine. It is the third edition since the start of the pandemic, going back to the original vaccine in 2021, the bivalent last year, and boosters, of course, in between. But this latest vaccine is one the FDA hopes will be updated annually, just like the flu shot. The problem is that those getting vaccinated have waned. While roughly 70% of those 5 and older in the United States completed the original vaccine, that dropped to 17%. Less than 1 in 5 for the bivalent shot in 2022. And there is concern that the majority of people will skip this latest COVID vaccine, especially those who need it the most. Amy Maxman is a science journalist and correspondent with KFF Health News and joins us with her reporting on the new COVID vaccine and why those at greatest risk may not get it. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, pleasure to be here.
Before we get into this latest COVID vaccine, I want to begin with your background. You have a PhD in evolutionary biology. How did that foundation prepare you as a journalist?
Well, the evolutionary biology comes in handy when you're thinking about how new variants arise. But I actually, you know, while I've been a journalist, I got interested in reporting on infectious diseases. I've reported on malaria and Ebola and a number of other diseases. What's interesting is what happens outside of the lab and issues like we're about to talk about today, where people may or may not want to take various measures to protect themselves from the disease. So that's how I got interested in all of this. So when COVID kicked off, you know, I was here for it.
And you've been covering the pandemic from the beginning. How did your previous work covering Ebola, drug-resistant malaria, that experience really shape how you approached COVID-19?
I mean, what's really been shocking is how similar they are, even though the context, the disease is so different and the context is so different. So many things just repeated themselves, like, you know, down to misinformation about people not believing in the Ebola virus to people not believing in COVID. So there are just so many parallels.
Yeah. I go back to one of your articles more than 2 years ago. It was in April of 2021, and it was in Nature. And the title was about inequality's deadly toll. And that was, you know, a year into COVID-19. And can COVID push science to finally address the issue? So that brings me to your piece today in 2023. What motivated this latest reporting?
What motivated me was really, you know, there is a lot of news, which is great, about the new boosters coming out. And terrific. You know, I've got an appointment to get my own. But the fact is, it's actually news that isn't being listened to by the majority of people in the U.S. You know, as you said in the beginning, you know, somewhere around 80% of people didn't get the last round of boosters. So there's no reason to think that they're going to get them this time around. And that's sort of what I wanted to talk about in this piece. That's really the big deal.
When it comes to that drop, I mean, you know, I had said it, I mean, roughly 70% completed the initial series back in 2021, or it could have been that single dose of Johnson & Johnson. What is behind the drop of the vaccine rate kind of plummeting to 17% last year when it came to the bivalent booster?
You know, there's probably a number of reasons, but one of the big ones is, well, you know, when the vaccines were first offered in 2021, this was a different time period. You know, there was things you could or couldn't do depending on if you were vaccinated. Deaths and hospitalizations were much higher than they are today. There was a lot less kind of immunity in the population of people who've just been infected. So there was really a, you know, a rush for those first vaccines. The other big factor was there was a huge amount of outreach. So you heard about them all the time, but also there were campaigns. You know, I got my first round of vaccines in a stadium. The next booster was in a church. I saw sort of vaccine rollout happen on farms in the Central Valley of California. So there was a lot of outreach to really, you know, target the people that would have the hardest time getting appointments at doctor's clinics and things like that. Yeah, a lot of that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, those community partners that you were talking about.
Yeah, so a lot of that's sort of evaporated. Instead, you know, we have the CDC advising to get this and some mention of it by the administration, but there really isn't that much else.
It's also important to note that COVID deaths have dropped, obviously, since 2021. According to the CDC, between 2021 to 2022, it dropped by nearly 50%. I think 47% is the exact percentage. So on the surface, that needle is moving in the right direction, but these numbers are not uniform across demographics. What did you learn about who's most likely to die from COVID?
Well, I will say this data is really hard to find. So when the public health emergency ended in the U.S. earlier this year, states are no longer required to report data to the CDC. The CDC no longer posts a lot of data because of that. A lot of states that used to have really good trackers on their site, I went to a lot of these different departments of health, they just don't do it anymore. So it's really hard to sort of say with any certainty who's dying and who's hospitalized right now. The numbers are tricky for various statistical reasons. But I can say that, you know, in the most recent data collected, the disparities that we saw with Black and Hispanic people being hospitalized and dying more often than white people, those still persisted. And there's no reason to think those would be different now. Also, there was some papers coming out suggesting that, you know, rates of death and hospitalization were higher in a lot of states, especially states in the South and some states with Republican leadership, which kind of also falls along other recent studies showing that people who identify as Republican or as conservative are a lot less likely to be vaccinated, especially with the booster vaccines.
Yeah. And now we have a new COVID vaccine that's available. And you write, you kind of lead within your reporting that nothing suggests that uptake will be better this time around. What groups and individuals most need the new vaccine?
So people most at risk are definitely older people, especially people who are, you know, above age 70. Most of the deaths are in older people in the U.S. So nursing homes are extremely important. And I was really surprised to see that rates of booster vaccine uptake were below, say, 55% in several states. And then when you look into the data, there's a number of facilities where you'll see vaccine rates. When I said vaccine, I meant booster rates. So you'll see booster rates below 10%. And that's quite bad. We know that the vaccines, their effects wane over time. So just the sheer fact that people were only vaccinated in 2021 puts them in a really vulnerable spot right now.
And when it comes to who is most likely to get this new vaccine, the quote that really stuck out to me is from an epidemiologist you spoke with at Yale. And he said that urging people to get boosters has really only worked for Democrats, college graduates, and people making over $90,000 a year. Why is that?
That's a great question. It's a great question. I don't have a simple answer for it, but it's certainly something that we do see, like, in, you know, for example, the disparities we see in say a place like Boston, where you'll have a lot of people who are Democrats, college educated, white. Those rates are quite high compared to places that are in rural regions or places where you might have an overwhelming majority of people be Republican. So we do see that that's the contingent that when the CDC makes a recommendation, they're going to go ahead and make an appointment at CVS or at Walgreens and get their booster, which is great. But the sad thing is, these are the folks who have gotten all of their boosters, and often they're the least amount at risk. So it's good that they're doing it. But if we really want to make a dent in this outbreak, like if we COVID is still one of the leading causes of death. There's about 1,000 people who were dying a week during this latest surge. If the U.S. really wants to start putting COVID behind us, the people that will really matter are going to be the people that have not gotten the boosters yet.
And this is also coupled with cost, Amy. I mean, this is the first round that won't be fully covered by the federal government, correct?
Yeah. So it's now a little trickier. It's kind of now it's gone to the commercial market. It's more like how we do a lot of vaccines and drugs in the U.S. So, you know, people on Medicare and Medicaid will get it through those insurance providers. And then everybody else who has insurance will get it through their own insurance providers. The details are getting kind of sorted right now. You're hearing stories of people having trouble, which I hope will be resolved in the next couple of weeks or so. And then the CDC has found sort of temporary funds to cover those who are uninsured. Those funds will expire.
Yeah, and Moderna and Pfizer, I mean, they more than quadrupled the price of the vaccines to about $130 a dose. Is that normal for a fourfold increase in a vaccine price?
You know, I don't know if there's a precedent for, you know, what normal is. But it's this price is certainly higher than most vaccines or a lot lower than that. So the price is really high. You know, a lot of folks are really upset that it's so high, especially given that the U.S. government or taxpayers really funded a lot of these vaccines development, especially for Moderna's. So it's a huge price increase given the amount of public funding that these groups had to create the vaccines. And it's hard to know the counterfactual, but I talked to a number of people who thought, you know, if the government didn't now have to fund so much more, you know, millions more in paying for vaccines, would the government have money left over in their COVID budgets to pay for the kind of outreach we were just talking about?
Yeah. And when it comes to outreach, I mean, you touched upon this, but the CDC did announce plans to temporarily provide vaccines for those who are uninsured. I mean, and this is partly through pandemic emergency funding. But when it gets to that outreach and that awareness, you know, do you think it's going to be challenging for people who actually are most at risk and need this type of assistance that they'll actually know about it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly it. So the money is, you know, it's going to go for, you know, paying for the doses, but they need to be administered. And then, you know, when you think about people who are experiencing homelessness, for example, they don't have a lot of those folks don't have their own care provider. The only time they see seek medical attention is when they're going to the emergency room. So finding out about where the vaccines are is difficult. So is, say, getting to that place. And, you know, as somebody, I spoke with one person who works with people who are homeless, and she mentioned, like, just leaving their belongings is actually quite hard. So this is the kind of thing that really requires outreach. I also wrote about, you know, people in jails and prisons. That's another set of data that we're not seeing a lot of data reported on them. But people who are incarcerated are at really high risk. Those were like the largest outbreaks we saw during the pandemic. That's because people can't, they can't socially isolate. Mask wearing is really tricky, you know, all the time. So they have a very high pressure when there are infections within a jail or a prison. There's a high pressure of infection. So those folks are at really high risk. And there's a lot of people who have underlying conditions in jails and prisons, and a lot of people who are older. And rates seem to be dropping among that group of people as well.
You mentioned that all of this data, I mean, it's just becoming harder to track. How did that create challenges to putting this story together?
It took a long time, you know, and it was very piecemeal. I had to call lots of people, you know, probably a dozen people for this short piece, just to find out about, you know, where can I find out about rates of booster uptake in jails and prisons. And it was piecemeal because it's no longer just being collected. So for example, there's a group in Minnesota, a consortium that tracks this sort of information. And what they found looking at electronic health records is just about 8% of incarcerated people in jails and 11% of those in prisons got last year's boosters. That's really low. But that wasn't reported necessarily by the state. And this isn't something that most states are reporting.
Finally, Amy, I mean, with all of the perspective that you have, where do you think we are in this stage of the pandemic? I mean, there are some people, I mean, if you look collectively in society, I mean, it may not look or feel like it's a pandemic, but, you know, we're learning differently from you.
Yeah. Like I said, it's still a leading cause of death. And we're about to hit the annual winter surge. I think until we get better vaccines that are more protective and that last for longer, we are going to see a surge of COVID every single winter for sure. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. The way to get that down would be to really make sure that those most at risk are getting their annual, and we should think of it not as a booster, maybe as a seasonal vaccine. So that's sort of going to be necessary. Let's see, last winter around, you know, in January, we were seeing 3,500 deaths per week. So I'd say folks really want to get vaccinated before then. And this can kind of, on top of this, we're going to have, you know, there's always the flu season in the fall and the winter. So that adds to it. And we've got RSV also. So it's more like respiratory infection season is upon us.
Amy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amy Maxman is a science journalist and correspondent for KFF Health News, sharing her reporting on the new COVID vaccine and why those at greatest risk may not get it. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.